Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And we are back from LVO. Pretty much everyone you've heard on the show guest hosting made an appearance. So we had myself, we had Don, we had Ben, we had Josh, we had Ray holding down the fort back, which was actually a huge help because every time you would message me, let me know, hey, what's going on with this? Something wasn't quite as clear on stream that was going on in the hall. We could kind of converse back and forth, everything that was going on. But the 2018 ITC season has wound down for the year, and it ended in dramatic fashion, and for once, in a good way. It was really nice. Great event. It was really a blast. And it all started Thursday night with GW revealing some new products, and some of them are very, very exciting. Ray, you want to dive into the new products?
Because I wasn't there, I don't know what order they did it in, but I think the biggest thing is going to be the new two-player box that's coming out. All right, the name of it is Shadow Sphere. It's going to be Space Marines, yet again. Primaris Space Marines, more importantly. And they'll be fighting against none other than the Black Legion. That was actually pretty exciting. They showed, actually before all the announcements on their community page, it was a picture of some Ultramarines fighting Black Legion, but there was no context behind it, so you couldn't quite tell what you were looking at. You had Primaris Marines that were kit out differently than what you're used to. And on the Black Legion side, there's the either Sorcerer or Dark Apostle that we saw the model of a few weeks ago. And another model that almost, when I saw it, it almost looked like a Hellbrute. Well, they've talked about it a bit. So on the Space Marine side, we're going to be seeing a new model for the Librarians. And then we're going to be seeing a new unit of Primaris Marines. They very much look like Sniper Scouts, and they are called Eliminators. Now, they haven't posted any rules, but fairly certain that unlike Scouts, these will still have their 3+ save. Then looking at the other side, we're actually seeing new models for the Chaos Space Marine troops. Hopefully we'll be seeing more information of that in the next few weeks. And then the image that I thought was a Hellbrute is actually going to be the new Plastic Obliterators. I actually have to say, first off, they visually do look quite a bit like the Hellbrutes.
Got a little bit of that Forge Fiend in them, too.
Yeah. These guys look amazing. They haven't announced it, but looking at this model, it looks like they very easily could have it be a multi-part kit with Mutilators, but we won't know anything until they announce it. Another model that was brought up is a new demon engine. It's called the Venom Crawler. It looks a lot like a spider. I did see on the image what looks like might be a gun or two, but there's
some small ones on each side. Yeah. Interesting. The one on one side, you can actually see like a creature kind of almost leaning out of a door, manning the gun. So,
oh yeah, I see it looking now.
Yeah,
there's no telling what this could be, but I'm as far as like rules go, but I'm pretty excited.
Well, there's two things they described, and they're also repeated on the Warhammer community page, which I thought was interesting. So that Dark Apostle thing, we thought, you know, oh, flames, it's got to be Dark Apostle. We were wrong. It actually is a new type of Chaos Sorcerer.
Okay.
And apparently, yeah, he is specializes in some sort of demonic sorcery. And the key thing that he is able to, armed with an array of spells that aid demonic allies and corruptus enemies, the Master of Possessions is a terrifying force on the battlefield. So we're not sure if he has just a greater way of summoning or what's going on. No one's really sure. But then you add the, the Venom Crawler to it. Venom Crawler is so saturated in the taint of the warp that its presence thins the veil of reality itself, allowing demons easier access to real space. So we're not exactly sure what that means. They wouldn't devolve into anything further. So that was kind of upsetting. But nonetheless, they still look really cool. And all of us are kind of thinking, okay, if Vigilus will do to Black Legion what it did to Space Marines and Primaris Marines, this could be really, really cool.
Yes.
So apparently there are going to be systematic updates called this Battle Sister Bulletin. And they showed off another new model. Not sure what it does. Sort of a standard barrier, bearer type person. Look kind of neat. They also announced the 2019 Heroes of Warhammer. Those are the community leaders. And so congratulations to all the winners there. And then they're kind of like, hey, one last thing. We've got another Primaris Lieutenant to show off.
And this is exactly like, the one many of us have been waiting for.
Yes. And Ray called it. It is indeed a plastic Abaddon. New sculpt. From what they showed, it looked awesome. And one of the GW people at the show did confirm it is larger almost. It should be similar size to Gilliman. So that's great. Don't know if that means it'll be a new stat line. Data slate, no word on that.
I'd like to think at the very least they'd give him some more wounds if they're actually gonna up his sides. But
as long as it's less than 9, that's fine.
You know, the model looks great, but then again, the only thing we see is a little bit of the sword and part of the talon. So there really is not much to go off of,
right,
for the looks. But you know what, plastic. He's going to be sized more appropriately. The only thing I've ever heard anybody complain about is that top knot. But let's see what we get before we complain about anything.
Yep. So it should be pretty cool. A lot of really neat stuff coming down the pike. A lot of the other stuff coming down the pike were for Age of Sigmar. There's a one bit of a crossover. There's a new plastic Skull Taker model coming out.
So is that Skull Taker?
That's Skull Taker. So that
I don't remember anything about it saying that it was Skull Taker.
So what's comes with hot on the heels of Wrath and Rapture last year with a redesigned Skull Taker. It's pretty cool looking. It's very similar to the original sculpt, but just a little proportions are a little more realistic. He's not as crunched over and compressed, but it's still the same pose with the sword in the air and lots of skulls and his cloak of skulls, and looks like he's holding somebody's heart that's on fire. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And you know, the old metal model, that cloak looked more like a trench coat than anything else.
Yeah, it does. So a couple of the new releases, Shadespire and just a couple stuff like that. So we'll see. The other thing too, to look forward to, back to, forgot about Shadowspear. One more thing. They said every model in the box is a new sculpt, and we have not seen every model that's in the box. So to quote the famous movie 7, what's in the box?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'm really curious on when it is going to come out.
Yeah, no announcement other than I think it had a countdown clock again, and I forgot how many days we're at this point.
Yeah, so they didn't put that up on the community page if they did that. So
there will also be another community survey coming out for 2019. So keep your eyes open on that. Apparently, they took the suggestions very seriously, and they felt that was very a proactive way to find out where they should be putting their attention to. So very exciting to see that.
Speaking of which, I've heard some people saying that they want to try to get people to all put in to bring the squats back. They want to do this year what they did last year and talk them into supporting an army that hasn't really been supported. Or in this case, has been gone.
You know, it's an interesting, the whole story of the squats, and most, you know, if you're a surprise, one thing, I ran into some of my old friends who have been in the hobby for a long time and remember when squats were in the game. And then there are actually several of our players that we ran into don't even remember what squats are. And so right off the bat, I felt older than dirt again. But yeah, long story short, the long, long ago, Games Workshop came out with, you know, they just followed the model. Okay, Eldar are elves, Chaos is Chaos, Necrons are Tomb Kings, we need, who's next? Orcs are Orcs, we need Dwarves, we'll make them Squats. And the Squat Army came out. And the designers felt that they really didn't do a very good job with the Codex, is what the story was. And they couldn't figure out how to expand on the race to make it more exciting, make them different enough from the Imperium, because they were an Imperial army. They really didn't know what to do with them. and they felt they painted themselves in a corner. And they made the mistake worse by making a worse mistake, and that was basically the squad homeworld was devoured by Tyranids, and there's only a few smatterings of them left. No more squad army. So they're all gone. And then I think, early 2000s, when Battlefleet Gothic came out, they hinted at a resurgence of the squads as a new race called the Demiurge. And there was talk of them coming out as a 40K army, but they realized that they had to pick one and they lost out to the Tau. And the idea is that they are a highly mechanical race. So not so much like Adeptus Mechanicus where everybody's robotic, but instead it's one Demiurge. And then he's got all these AI parts that controls the spaceships. So they have their spaceships only have a crew of 3 or 4 people and everything else is on autopilot. And their tanks and their dreadnoughts and stuff like that are highly, so it's almost basically would be an assault Tau type army with battle suits that way. And the way they look is very much like Vikings dwarves. They're short and stocky, but they're not the silly dwarves from the squat days. They have braids and strange biomechanical pieces and oxygen tube cannula sticking out of their noses and stuff like that. They looked really cool, and apparently they were allied with the Tau in Battlefleet Gothic. And nothing's come of it until, last year we had a squat mercenary for Necromunda.
Yeah, we got another one this year too.
Yep, so everybody's all excited they're going to come back as an army. So we'll see. I don't know. I actually remember playing with them in both 40K and in Titan Legion. Titan Legion, they were awesome because they had the Colossus, which was a big super heavy tank that was powerful enough to one-shot a Reaver Titan. And everybody used them as an ally, but they weren't exciting enough. They had a lot of bikers. They had this silly thing called a land train, which basically was the size of 5 land raiders linked up in a big caterpillar looking thing. But they're kind of like how orcs were in second edition. They were comical and silly. They were like an imperial version of that. But what's the Space Marine artillery piece? The Thunderfire Cannon. That was originally a squat weapon. That was one of their
classes. Was it?
Yeah, it was called the Thud Gun. And they in White Dwarf, they actually had you cut out the template, which was 4 circles, and then they were connected, so you could walk the template around and hit targets if the first shot didn't hit. But that's ancient times. We're talking when Wraith Lords were called Eldar Dread Knights. That's how old that stuff is. So we'll see. Yes. So the writing campaign, I'm sure, will conclude, because the squat thing really cheesed a lot of people, which I was surprised. I was were there really that many squat players? Really? But I don't know. I was kind of I get it. You made a mistake and probably wasn't the best way to handle it, but they were crappy codex. I'm sorry. Get over it.
It's probably just one of those nostalgia things. People like it so much because it's not available anymore.
Part of it. And I was on the other end of the spectrum. So I did leave 40K briefly when third edition came out. I played another game system. And their whole marketing strategy was, we're going to be the anti-GW. And then they were very successful at it. They're kind of like the war machine of the 90s. And then a large private investment group from Europe said, we can take on Games Workshop. So they bought the company, moved them out of Philadelphia, and moved them to Edinburgh, Scotland, and told them to copy everything Games Workshop does, meaning box sets, huge support, redo your monthly magazine. Instead, they did every mistake that GW had done in their lifetime in the next year. And wow. One of them was, yeah. So, for example, they came out with a new edition where they changed the rules completely. So it was a totally different game. They eliminated an entire faction. So they basically, that's where the term squatting came from. And it was actually my favorite faction. I was like, what? What happened? What do I do with my models? So I get it. Yeah, they're out of business in 2 years. And they went about a business so suddenly that retailers got stuck with product and their shelves and nothing. You know, everybody knew the game's out of business. So I guess we'll wait for these to go on sale to buy up models for something else. And the company has since, the licensing has been sold twice and trying to resurrect. Actually, one of the versions of the game was called Resurrection. Didn't quite happen. So there you go. Wargamer history here in our LVO episode. But lots of neat new products coming down the pike. We've also had some speculations what to happen. It seems like a very short window. All these products should come out by the end of the first quarter. So what happens beyond that? We'll probably get into that in a future episode. But for now, we're going to take a break and we're going to talk a little bit about the LVO experience. Get you guys kind of a review of what just happened. See you guys after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey guys, Eric here at Las Vegas Open. We are T-minus an hour from the start of round one. Paint judging is just winding down. So far, things are running fairly smoothly. Registration's tight and moving through. So a lot of the key players are making their way to the convention hall. For those of you who've been here before, the entire large convention room at the end of Bally's here has been converted to strictly the Warhammer 40K Championships. So it's interesting to see as some of the larger sports celebrities are making their way through the tables and being accosted, which is one of the reasons why Don isn't joining me at the moment. He has a steady stream of fans asking questions about another one of his wonky lists. Of course, all the talk, too, not only about what lists and the terrain being put out, is last night's announcements from GW, some key new models being addressed. So we have a new Skull Taker for Chaos players, both for Sigmar and 40K. We, of course, have new Black Legion models. We have some surprise, not only new Chaos Marines, the Walker that we identified called a Venom Crawler, I believe it's called. The new wonky sorcerer, which is supposed to help with some sort of demon possession type abilities. But the big surprise was on the other side of things, the Imperial models. There is a new Primaris Psyker who's got some crazy camel robes that's supposed to assisting scouts. And we have some Primaris scouts with sniper rifles coming out. So all very interesting new stuff to come out. And of course, the ultimate tease at the end that was probably the worst kept secret. There is actually finalized plastic Abaddon kindly coming out. So all in good time. So again, we're about T-minus 1 hour before the start of round one. More updates as we go through the show. Talk to you guys soon. Welcome back to our extensive coverage of LVO here on the Exterminatus podcast. I'm here with the legend from England, your London GT winner, and he's already got through the first round, so no quick upsets because he played some bum like me. Mike, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, glad to be on here, Eric.
So you seem to be the king of the large events. First time in the United States, my understanding?
Yeah, first time in the States playing 40K. So my second big event really of the year, and it's gone pretty well. So yeah, I'm just absolutely amazed at the size of the place.
I was about to say, how does it compare to London GT?
So first of all the Warhammer is in one room for this event. London, it was split between two rooms, so you had about 200 players per room in London, and obviously here we've got 800, and that's just in one room. So it's, whilst London was a big event, this is on another scale altogether.
Got it. So I need to be frank, because you may not listen to our show, but one of the things we brought up 3 years ago, interviews Alex Harrison, English ETC player, and one of the key things he had struggled with was travel distance, being mentally fit for the event, and especially the number of games that we play here in the United States.
Yeah.
How do you feel you're going to tackle that today?
So I came over on Wednesday evening. I got about an hour and a half sleep Wednesday night. I was wide awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I moved over to Bally's last night, and I got about 2 hours sleep. So I'm starting to feel the effect. So I need a good night's sleep tonight, but it certainly is something all the British people have talked about. We do think, you know, sort of by game five, game six, we are going to start getting tired, making a couple of mistakes. So it's just laying off the beers, drinking plenty of water, trying to keep concentrated.
Excellent. Another key thing that people bring up is the difference between the metas, the mission format. What would you do to prepare for the ITC missions?
Well, we play quite a bit of ITC over in England now. So my list, I change my list between ITC and ETC. I have more units on my ETC list just because I'm wary of giving up kill and kill more for ITC. So that's how my list differs. But as far as preparing for a meta, normally you can sort of predict a meta, but I think for an event of this size, you could play absolutely anything. So whilst orcs are obviously the big one to make sure that you could deal with those, you had to have something to deal with pretty much every list out there.
Got it. Yeah. All right. Anything you're not looking forward to seeing in terms of lists while you're here?
Deathwatch. Cultists don't like Deathwatch. Any tank commanders with Punisher battle cannons, I'm not looking forward to those. And I suppose anything that I've not seen before. So the usual lists, my list can kind of deal with, but it's those obscure units that when you get an event this size, they could just throw a curveball in there, especially with Forge World being allowed, which we tend not to allow over in England. So that's something that I don't fully understand what it does. That'll be my worry.
Those puzzle lists are always the difficult ones to get from there.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck. Great game between us.
Yeah, appreciate it, Eric. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you as well. Thank you.
I think that's what it is. All right. All right, so here we are at the LVO, round three of day one. I'm with Eric.
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm pretty good. We just had a pretty awesome, well, awesome for me there.
That was a good game all around. No, it was really good. I think the best thing is when people are like, well, Index armies can't compete, learn your codex, because that was something really well played, took advantage of the Alpha Strike, really put me on back foot, and played catch up all day.
Yeah, no, it was a tough in the beginning there with the Grots. I was a little worried there, but I was just able to get a lot of attacks in there on you. But no, you had a good list there, and you even picked really good secondaries, like the planes and how you were jumping in the back of the Scourges. It was a good game. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
Stuff I don't usually see.
So the Codex coming out, it came out this Saturday for Team Sealer Call. What changes are you going to make?
I'm just adding, honestly, like four characters.
Okay.
No Hive Guard. I'm just adding four of the new characters and a lot more of Aberrants.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm just doing way more.
More of that.
I'm doing two Aberrant Bombs with all the character buffs.
That would work.
But I'm not really going to add too much. But we'll see.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
So have you had a chance to look at any of the other stratagems that caught your attention?
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stratagems. Like, okay, we have Vec now. We have Fire and Fade. We have, what else do we have? We pretty much have a version of Cloud of the Flies.
Okay.
So if I have my Aberrants or Gene Stealers in a Ruin or in any type of cover, if I have another unit closest, you cannot shoot that unit. It pretty much gives the unit a character keyword in cover.
Death Guard have the same thing.
Yeah. Effective. So it's pretty crazy, especially with Tyranids. And right. It could be very interesting. So I'm pretty excited going into the new season with it.
So there's a certain Canadian who occupies the entire airwaves and speaks for your country. Tell us about Toronto. What's the Toronto game scene look like?
Toronto game scene's pretty good. It's pretty busy. I guess you're talking about Val, I would assume.
I may or may not.
Yeah. There's a lot of very
good... Love you, Val.
Love you too, buddy. There's a lot of very good people like Val that really push the scene forward. There's always a game. Any day of the week, if I don't got work, I can find a game. Lots of RTTs, lots of local GTs. You got people like Ridvin, who is Scarcast up in Barrie, who runs a lot of the GTs. If he's not running it, he's self-organizing it.
Right.
You got a lot of great stores that are running. They used to run RTTs, and now they're doing GTs.
Yep.
And it's pretty awesome up there, man. You got to come up for a game.
I would definitely. I got to redo my passport first. But yes,
that's
I would love
it,
to come up. Love Toronto. I've been there several times, so I really miss it. Love to come up. Same thing, come on down south.
For sure, man.
Many Canadians come down to Phoenix for this time of year, so hope to see you in 4 weeks for Scorched Earth Open.
For sure, man. Yeah. I'll have to get your information about that.
So tell us about your podcast.
Well, we just started a podcast from Toronto. We're 40K Unfiltered. We were the Seer Council, but then everyone started switching around, and we're not really Eldar-oriented, so we decided to just go 40K Unfiltered because we all... We can get a little rowdy out there.
That sounds
so
cool.
We just have fun. That's all it. Right. Just a podcast about four fun guys having fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the great game. Appreciate it.
Man. Thank you.
All right, we're back after the break. An awesome turnout at LVO. It was just amazing. Gargantuan hall. It's one of those things you try to take a picture, you just cannot fathom the size and the scope of this event until you see it firsthand. I think the scariest part about the whole thing, they have room for more. They could easily have done 1,000 players. As is, it was close to 800 as expected. And before we get into the results of the events, and it was, which was very exciting, the final game did come down to a final die roll of the game. Incidentally, not only was it the largest single day, a single Warhammer tournament, it was one of the largest conventions ever, but it was also the largest streamed event. They had over 13,000 viewers, which is, I think, more than saw Chris Kattan's last sitcom. So that was pretty amazing. But it really ran fairly smoothly. There was a minor hiccup at the beginning when all 800 players tried to log on the best scopes pairing at the same time to get their first round. And minor hiccups there. So, but again, scope of the thing, the vendor hall was really nicely put together. A lot of neat stuff, a lot of neat vendors. Lot more, how do I say it, immersive. Like sometimes they're just kind of in a row against a back wall and you just go from, you know, table to table. These had more, like when you're in the Battle Foam exhibit, you were surrounded by the Battle Foam guy. You didn't know there was other vendors near you until you walked out of their area and walked into like Teutonic Studios, or I forgot the guy's name, but the guy was doing all these, had these cool t-shirts that all had gamer sayings. GW had their store there. Forge World was there. One of our buddies picked up a Falchion. It's pretty cool to buy Forge World on the spot and be able to take it home with you. It's really neat. Plenty of other events.
A couple people that we know actually picked up Sanguinius too.
Yep, Sanguinius was a hot item. It was very interesting. People are very divided on that. They love it or they hate it. There's nobody in between. So that was pretty cool. Other key things, we focus a lot on the competitive part here in the podcast. So just three things I want to bring to you guys' attention. Right off the bat, the social aspect of this, I could not get Origin Edgewise with Don. Actually, you didn't need to find Don. I would leave Don in a corner and he would get so many people walking up to him, talking to him. He never would move for hours. So it was, I was able to reconnect with a lot of friends from across the country. So the social aspect is wonderful, and there's a lot to do in Vegas. It's not just gambling and awesome food. So it was people asked him what was the highlight of the trip, and I have to say it was lunch on Sunday, because it was the first time there was most of our team was still there, and it was the first time we could sit down and breathe and talk about our six games without feeling like we were stepping on each other's toes, but then really dissect, hey, what are we going to do next year to be better? And so that was a really cool feeling. Being live for the award ceremony was really interesting to watch. The table of awards, I'm not even talking about just prize support and random, here I have a basilisk. Oh, great, I won Best Eldari. I get a basilisk? What? I mean, they went to like a real trophy case provider, and five of our teammates actually won awards, both best in faction and for both high DC scores and hobby track. So that was really cool to see, but there's some of the other winners were really impressive. It was really neat to see that. Another highlight real quick though, was a guy that we're good friends with from What's New with Jeff and Mike. It's a video show that's on every week and kind of goes over new products. They were there and they attended one of the painting seminars. Which normally, like, yeah, and I kind of walked by it. He had to walk by it to get to your room. And I would look in there. And I'm like, eh. You know, it didn't look like much. I was mistaken. Mike comes over and says, I just got done painting these. And he hands me three Primaris Blood Angels. They were gorgeous. They were granted, Mike's not a slouch at hobby. He's really good. But the fact that he says, yeah, I whipped these up in the seminar, which means he probably only had 20 minutes of actual paint time. They were easily standard quality from any painting service, easily above tournament level, you know, the not quite master class, but that middle range. And he's saying, well, what he was saying was, you know, this is how you do things differently. He was describing some of the new techniques. And this one pro tip was worth the admission alone. And he said, like, wait, who'd you say it was? It was Peachy from Games Workshop. The guy who helps out Duncan with those videos you see every day on Facebook. He's teaching the class. I'm going like...
Well, here's the thing. If I remember right, they were saying when they were first announcing that he was going to be doing some of the videos too, is that he's the one who helped teach Duncan how to paint.
That is exactly it. Actually, it was Duncan who asked, bring him back. He was advocating because they were like, oh, Duncan's going to be all bent out of shape. And Duncan's like, heck no, he's the one who taught me to paint. Bring him back. So, so that's really, it was just amazing just to see in the scope of things. Terrain was a really nice, they did a really nice job of theming the terrain. So you didn't have like ice terrain on a green fat mat. So it all matched. Was it enough? Some tables were sparser than others, but when you're hosting a party for 800 of your closest friends, it wasn't bad. I've been to a lot worse tournaments. That's for sure. So, overall I had 6 great games. I was almost famous for a hot minute. So we're all waiting our first round pairings, and my phone was taking the longest to load up. And finally somebody says, you're at table such and such. I'm like, okay. I start wandering over and I'm walking by and I look at my phone. I go, oh God. So I started the day with Mike Porter. That's right. Winner of the London GT, currently ranked number 2 in the ITC. That was my first round matchup. Really nice guy. You get to hear him later in the show. He stuck around for an interview. So it was a really good conversation with him. We'll talk about his exploits. Spoiler alert, he was not upset in the first round. And I even joked with him. So it's like, yeah, I was a little starstruck. And that's exactly what happened. I totally choked on turn 4. I had the chance.
Once again, you snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Defeat from the jaws of victory, yes, which is my superpower. So I'm still lamenting about it because his list was the hard counter to my list, so I don't think I would have won. I'm not making any pretenses, but I could have made it. Anyway, the one time I decided to roll hot, I was like, so what happened was he's playing Cult of Spam with a Thousand Suns Supreme Command Detachment. And what all that means is he's got Abaddon surrounded by 120 cultists, and he's got 2 Demon Princes with Ahriman and then a trio of the old Obliterators. And what he would do is then go, oh, I see your Grotesques, Eric. I'm going to Death Hex them to eliminate their 4-up Invul, which pretty much the source of their power. And the Obliterators will just keep firing at them, and then use their Slaanesh, so he could fire them twice per turn. And I was just picking up Grotesques left and right. I'm like, oh, this could be bad. And he knew that Ilyak was picking off shots on Abaddon, so he Dark Crystalled a large squad of Zangors. I think it was a full pack of 30 at them, and I was able to hold off a little bit, but they not long enough. So I ended up deploying my witches to that side. And this is where the critical mistake comes in. I make the charge and I go, okay, I don't need all of them to swing because I want to kill them on his turn so I can charge the cultist bomb. And hopefully at this point, Abaddon was one invul save away from failing and dying from another Ilyak Night Spear sniper round. So all of a sudden, all those cultists are now going to be no longer fearless, no longer re-rolling to hits. And I still had about 17 witches to my blob. I'm going to rip right through them. So it's my turn. I do the charge. I position it. I'm sitting there measuring. I don't care about the clock. I'm going to do this right this time. And I roll the dice. It was the hottest roll I think I've ever rolled the entire weekend. I wipe out 17 of them. Force a morale check, eliminates the squad. I'm like, oh.
Nice.
So now my witch blob is standing in front of 100 plus cultists with Abaddon still going, shoot them. Eliminates the entire squad of wit. Now I'm like, oh, that was my chance. And it went up in smoke. So anyway, that was my brush of fame. As typical, I choke on the biggest stage. But overall, really good games. Good variety of players. It was funny. I was so worried about playing knights. I didn't play them to the Sunday RTT. And it's like, okay. Everybody kept saying the menace of orcs. I only played one orc player. And spoiler alert, no orc player made the top eight at LVO. But overall, just a really good experience. And it's not just about accumulating points and championships and winning. It was just a really unique experience. And it is a must do. The pageantry of such a large event. It was just so much fun. So really good event. Good to be there with friends. Had a good time with my old friends. Be there with my teammates. It was a really good bonding session with everyone there. And Ray, you got to come with us next year.
That's the plan.
Yep. It's definitely a way to go. So it was a lot of fun. Should we get to the results? All right.
Let's go.
So last week we made bold predictions and we were all happy because the year before we got five of the top eight, right? Yeah. Not so good this year. So the long story short of it is Mike Porter. No, he ended up losing. Trent Northington, who I picked to win the event. Yeah, didn't make it. At least he finished in the top.
Yeah, and he didn't make it because he ended up going up against Nanavati during the third round.
Nick Nanavati did not make it. He lost in the fifth round to Alex Harrison. Now you probably think I've heard that name before. Yes, Alex Harrison is the one who played Jeff Robinson in the Invitational at the London GT and is one of the top English players on their ETC team. A couple other names that we were gallivanting about. Oh, they'll do great. Matt Root didn't make it because, well, he lost to our co-host, Don Hoosen. Don was able to knock him off. A couple other key players that we thought would do really well. Archon Skari had a really rough Sunday. He ended up dropping down to 28th place as the season ended. So, as a matter of fact, he wasn't even the top Dark Eldar player at the tournament. That went to Nick Gower. So Nick Gower was actually the top Dark Eldar player for the weekend. So a whole lot of early round 3, 4, and 5 losses. Got to give another shout out to one of our teammates. And he was the hero of last year's LVO, Mark Wright with his Blood Angels. And he flat out said, I'm here to prove that it was not a fluke. And he actually was undefeated on day one, did really well on first game, day two, and then the wheels came off. And he even admit he had a couple opportunities. He could have turned it around, but still had a dramatic entrance into the game. Was able to knock off some top players as well. So great job there, Mark. Danny Olivas is another one of our local guys we've been heralding. He did really well, 4-1-1, and had a tough time in his one loss. Was talking to him about it today. Just really hard on himself because he knew he made some critical mistakes. And it's like, well, celebrate the success and learn from your mistakes, and we'll move forward from there. All right. We talked a lot about our personal experience. Let's get down to it. We are a tournament podcast. What were the tournament results? So your top eight for the Las Vegas Open final event of the 2018 seasons. Look something like this. In eighth place, Aaron Towler with Adeptus Astartes. In seventh place, Scott Horez with Cadian Shock Troops. Sixth place, William Abelez with Tau. In fifth place, Sean Naden, the current Captain America with Inari. Sean also took home Renaissance Man, which is a combination of his generalship and his hobby scores. In fourth place, Justin Lois with Cult Mechanicus. He also picked up several painting awards for his army as well. In third place, from Relentless D, Michael Snyder with Astra Militarum. In second place, aforementioned British Phenom Alex Harrison coming in second from Team Glasshammer. And your 2018 LVO champion is none other than Brandon Grant with Astra Militarum. And that's exactly it. The Brandon Grant we talked about. Many games had a tough sledding this year. Last year, he was almost nonstop running through events. This year, he was stumbling on the final tables. This year, pulled it out on the biggest stage of the season, winning the LVO. So, with those results, how does that mix up our ITC season? Well, we're going to talk to Mike Porter, listen to our interview after this, and then after that break, we will go over the final ITC 2018 standings. Welcome back after the break. We are wrapping up our 2018 ITC season coverage. Just back from LVO, and I say just back, I mean really just back. We are currently recording. We started recording about 9 o'clock local time here in Phoenix. It's going on 10 o'clock as we always do, and I arrived 4 o'clock this morning back at the house, so it's been a long day. Nonetheless, let's get, with no further ado, your final ITC 2018 season standings look something like this. In 10th place, Joshua Death. In 9th place, Trent Northington. 8th place, Andrew Gagneau. In 7th place, taking a tumble from the top three, is Nick Rose. Rising into the top 10 with a strong performance, we talked about his 3rd place finish at LVO, is Mike Snyder. Sean Nain, who we mentioned, also a strong performance. I believe it is 4th straight top 8 at LVO. Sean Nain coming in 5th place in the final standings for the ITC. My first round opponent, as most people know him as the winner of the London GT, Mike Porter, coming in 4th place. In 3rd place, the guy who was in 1st place all season long, fell up short here at the LVO, Nick Nottavati, coming in 3rd. British phenom Alex Harrison coming in 2nd. And your aforementioned winner of the LVO garnered enough points to win the season championship, none other than Brandon Grant. So congratulations, Brandon, and all our winners. Several team winners, championships. Beast Coast ended up taking the team championship. And a couple key players, as we mentioned, our buddy Mark Wright took top Blood Angels. Our buddy Don Husen took top Death Guard player. Our buddy Zach Elgrosma took top Renegade Knights. And Don Oliver's taking a Hobby Track winner in Inari. So after a great season with his team as well. So now that the season is over, we immediately start into the 2019 season. Ray, what events do we have going on this weekend?
All right. We've got the Guardian Cup 40K ITC tournament in Portland, Oregon. The Wheat City Open GT in Manitoba, Canada. And the... Yeah, no kidding. And then we've got the MidCon 2 in Vyborg.
I'm sure it's one of those rare cases where the sequel will be better than the original.
I do believe is... lots and lots of cold areas getting tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. So even in a cold area, there's a good chance there's some 40K happening here. So on that note, I need to get to bed. It has been a long day, a great event. Glad to be back. Exterminatus Podcast will be back in full force for the 2019 season. So looking forward to talking to you about that. In the meantime, leave us a review on iTunes or on our Facebook page. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.